motivation for that? What was in your thinking about it?
Well, I guess the suspicion that this sort of thing was going to happen, you know, the oil embargo problem didn't happen all by itself. It had been cooking for some time.
Right.
And
since you've been in Europe, where they're dependent upon the
we were clued into that sort of thing because they have much smaller cars than
right.
than we do.
The whole tradition had rubbed off on
you. And we couldn't see why you couldn't get equal performance out of a smaller car if you do the car right.
Mm-hmm.
So you just, as you bring the size of the car down, you bring the size of the engine down with it.
Mm-hmm. So this task force that you had set up was an early attempt to address some of those problems.
That's right. And again, we got Bill Mitchell's full support. He understood this. It was his way of thinking too.
So
at the same time, we were getting lovely looking cars,
mm-hmm.
but they looked different and they looked new.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't give up any interior space in doing this. We didn't give up any luggage space in doing it.
Uh-huh.
We had the complete good things in the car,
in
a smaller package.
Engine space.
We shortened from the windshield to the front wheels.
What sort of opposition did you find in the company? Were there skeptics?
Well, of course, there are always skeptics for change.
Right.
Change is no good. But by this time, Pete Estes had president and. He's a pretty forward-looking guy.
He succeeded Jim Roche.
Yeah.
It was kind of a nice guy to kind of start to get. Jim Roche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Estes was an engineer.
He was an engineer, and he always he spent a lot of time at design because he knew how important that was.
Good.
And he understood it. He understood what you need for good design. I remember one outdoor meeting we had where we had this complete line of new cars done the task way with the shorter dashed axle, shorter size, lower weight, smaller dimensions, but they looked good, they looked fine, but they didn't use a lot of V8s. Well, we only used, actually in this plan we used V8s in, oh say from large Olds, Buick, and Cadillac,
mm-hmm.
but nothing else.
Uh-huh.
At that time, we took photographs of the complete line of cars with us explaining all the good points, and then those were played back to those who were not fortunate enough to see the display.
Photographs or motion pictures?
Motion pictures.
Yeah, right. With an overlay and narration.
Yeah. All of the it took a number of shows to start to convince the top people that maybe there was something in all this. I'm sure they knew it before, but it was awfully hard to break into their habits. And I can understand that because they were making money hand over fist doing it the old way.
Yeah.
As long as people were buying the old way.
Not unlike Henry Ford II's mindset of that
period. Yeah.
His intervening for change and selling that crazy thing.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But how did Estes overcome this opposition? Or,
well, we had.
How did you overcome his?
Yeah, there was some of both. We did make. Our first breakthrough was on the medium sized Chevrolet. We had one model that they wanted to change. It was a replacement for the Nova.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually became the Citation.
Yes.
So we completed that model, I'd say 90% of it,
mm-hmm.
before the production studios found time to take it over.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding here, they really didn't have time, but
yeah.
They were doing other things.
Yeah.
Eventually they took it over and completed the car.
Where would you have this done? What physical space?
Well, we had just about the whole first floor of our design building.
Okay.
Above that were the production studios.
But you had mechanics.
modelers and
perfect.
Everything that they had, but some smaller quantities of them. We had a meeting out in at the Proving Ground in Arizona, and we took the models out there.
Where was that in Arizona?
Where?
Let's see.
Well, it's near. It's out in the country, but it's near Tempe.
Near Tempe?
Yeah.
Does it have an operational name?
The Proving Ground.
Yeah.
And we flew the models out. What was to become the Citation, and that was the first breakthrough on the front wheel drive. But we had it all planned. In addition to that, what would the small car look like? Smaller than that, what would the larger cars be like? What would the Park Avenue be like? What would the top Oldsmobile or Cadillac?
Uh-huh.
And as it turned out, what's coming out now is awfully close in general concept to that, except they shortened the. Luggage space, reduce the luggage space when we didn't do that.
That's right. They really constricted the luggage space.
Mm-hmm. I think they got a little bit concerned about the fuel economy directives.
Uh-huh.
And probably they didn't meet their goals on the directives.
Uh-huh.
Well, we know they didn't, because they just changed it.
Changed it, right. They finally got changed. Well, what, so you presented this as a
loose proposal. It was meant as an educational thing as much as anything, because in no way could we do the final product for all of those cars, but these were advanced vehicles,
uh-huh.
So they were presented as concepts, ideas.
Uh-huh.
And
what was your forum?
We had a plan too as to when various cars could. There's no way that General Motors, with all of its money, can change all of the cars at the same time. So we knew that you had to start with one and then do another and then do another.
What was your forum and how was it received?
Well, the way it finally turned out, they had meetings with all of the divisions on future products. I made part of it, and other people made part of it. And on display were the models that I'm talking about. And so everybody that means anything in the corporation had an opportunity to review that and set the wheels in motion and see what they thought, how they felt about it. You're going to have some people against it and some people for it.
Obviously, this was the first attempt at the first coherent attempt. The need for downsizing.
Yeah.
On a company-wide level.
Yeah, that's right. But it became obvious after a while that that was a necessity.
Right.
Or they were going to sink.
So what sort of reaction did you get?
Well, again, from Bill Mitchell, we got a very positive thing, and he was working on the other top people
right. To
go our way, but it's a slow process.
Oh, yeah.
And I expected it would be slow, and I didn't expect to accomplish everything that we were asking for. You always ask for more than you're going to get.
Sure. Good point. But basically, then, you set the tone and the direction of General Motors' downsizing program that they rather cautiously introduced in the mid-70s.
I'd like to think it came from this,
Yeah. But
I think anybody could see eventually that it had to be done, so.
Did it necessitate, as I recall from that period, a rather large financing? In other words, they had to borrow the money eventually to do it, didn't they? Some tooling.
I really am not familiar enough with that.
Yeah.
But it took a tremendous amount.
Yeah.
I know the cost of the Citation was big, and they've done number of other things since then. So
the citation was the pilot model, pretty much.
Yeah.
That was your aim, was to reduce weight, reduce the engine size, and reduce
gain fuel economy.
And gain fuel economy. Yeah. The government was becoming increasingly insistent.
And I think at the same time with front wheel drive, you gain roadability.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's a better car in snow and ice. It's a better handling car.
What had been the history of front wheel drive in your experience over the years? Reasons why it wasn't adopted, say, a decade before? What would be your observations today on the history?
Well, I suppose there were certain technical problems that had to be overcome, but they had been overcome before we started in this.
Certainly
by some of the European.
Yeah, the Europeans had it.
Yeah.
The transactional principle.
And we didn't see any way to get to reduce the size of the car and yet retain the luggage space and the passenger space other than with front wheel drive.
It eliminated that horrendous tunnel.
Yeah, it eliminated the tunnel that allows you to shorten the car with a transverse engine.
Right.
Now, early on in this program, we were dealing with the rotary engine, the Wankel engine.
The GM flirted with that for about
yes,
a decade.
Yes, Ed Cole was deeply involved in this, and
yeah.
He had a contract with the rotary.
With NSU, wasn't it?
With NSU.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in making three cars with the rotary engine in them.
Uh-huh.
And I guess it was an offshoot of this that led us to use it in the task program.
Right.
And these two cars, one was, well, they were both medium-sized cars. Also build a Corvette with a transverse mid-engine rotary, which we had Farina build in Italy.
And Benin Farina?
Benin Farina.
Yeah.
Of Vellante fame.
Yes, of course.
Recently.
They're back. It's,
yeah.
They're history repeated. So.
Yeah.
How did that go over? How did it?
Well, I think by the time we got it built and over here, the rotary engine idea had died.
Was there a problem with fuel economy?
Big one with fuel economy and also pollution.
Oh, right.
They couldn't get the pollution licked. Now, I don't know why. Mazda didn't seem to have that problem.
No, isn't that funny? Yeah. Although they've limited to one line. Until very recently, the only car that Mazda used in was the sporty car. The
RX-7.
But I think they're bringing it out now in a new one of their other lines. I think they finally decided that the public's ready for a rotary. There's some problem with the seals too, is there any problem?
Yeah.
The engineering problem, you just couldn't be overcome with that.
Yeah, right? Bob Templin, T-E-M-P-L-I-N.
Oh, yes.
Was the man that Cole had in charge of this at our engineering staff. And my group worked with him on the design of a couple of cars. He has since gone to Cadillac, where he was chief engineer, and now he's, I don't know what he is now.
Was he in charge of the Wankel program for Cole?
Yeah.
Tried to bring it to the fore.
But he couldn't solve those problems.
Mm-hmm. That's dead now in Europe, isn't it? The rotary engine.
I think so.
Only the Japanese.
Yeah. And I don't know why they're still using it, whether it's so good or nobody else is, just the one.
They've overcome the difficulties.
Yeah.
Well, that was an exciting program for you. Gee, that must have been very satisfying for you to come up with this rather visionary.
It was, yeah. But I remember, I guess it was after what became the citation had been sort of approved by GM, by top management. Then we were approaching the next program, which was a smaller car. And who are we showing it to? Anyway, we were showing them this new front wheel small car.
Uh-huh.
We hadn't said it's front wheel drive yet. now what? You got another damn front wheel drive to show me?
Who's this?
I can't remember who it was. But anyway, that shows that it hadn't quite worked through.
Yeah.
Because whatever was good for the Citation was equally good for a smaller car or a bigger car.
No. Somewhere along the line,
Speed Estes.
Oh, Speed Estes.
Yeah, but it surprised me because that's not like me. Although Pete has a funny thing. He will argue with you, but what he's trying to do is draw you out and let you argue back to him. He wants to see if you really have anything to say about it.
Okay.
And that's a pretty good characteristic. Weight out there.
Oh, okay.
That was not efficient.
No, there isn't. So you probably don't drive it again. No, maybe you got it.
It's a combination of that.
Oh, okay. So the,
where that really started was in England. took place in 1977. You mean why I left? Why? I thought I'd done my duty. I've been there 40 years.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that the style that we had per se, because these things change. We've got to keep up to date.
Right.
And we've got some terrific designers. If they're let loose, they turn the world upside down.
You felt that it was easier to produce those special cars, specialty cars, than the mainstream of the GM product line.
Well, I think it's always easier to do a Corvette or a Camaro type car than it is a full size passenger car, because you have fewer things tying your hands,
right,
in the way of dimensions and so on.
Generally, over the years, your career has been one of pretty much a series of successes. Apparently, your peers speak of you respectfully and as a person who's done a lot of good things. How do you feel about your career? Looking back on it, are you satisfied with what you accomplished?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't do anything else but what I did.
Good, good.
I enjoyed it all tremendously. I don't mean that there weren't some bad times,
mm-hmm.
but in any walk of life, there are bad times. And I really enjoyed doing what I was doing, and if I were to start over again today, I wouldn't do anything else. Even though it's under different circumstances today, I think there's still as much enjoyment to be had out of doing that kind of work as there was 40 years ago when I started. And I think it helped a lot to have worked with or under some of the people that I've worked under.
Mm-hmm.
You can start with John Jarda, who I only knew for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
He contributed a lot of things to my little bit of education.
Dynamic fellow.
Certainly Harley Earl contributed a lot. And Bill Mitchell the same way. They were both, I would call, real leaders. Not that I haven't been upset with both of them at times, but you take things in the whole. Very good.
Have you thought much about, some people say, well, my formula is form follows function. That's my credo. Do you have any such highfalutin?
No, I don't. Maybe I should, but I don't.
What has been your formula over the years? Hard work, of course. Hard thinking.
Well, I think you have to tune your thinking on a thing like an automobile to what you think the public will accept and wants.
That's really the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Without compromising your basic principles of taste. And
I think it's wrong to put yourself on a pedestal and say, I know what they want, and they'll produce that kind of thing. We're designing things for people's consumption. They won't consume them if it's not what they want to consume.
You don't. Well, you obviously are attuned to the marketplace.
I was, maybe. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that you lose track of once you get out of the mainstream.
Do you?
I still know what I want.
Yeah, right. Well, you're an average consumer.
Well, I'm one of them.
Yeah, right. You see in today's cars what you want, or do you think they're wanting?
Well, I suppose if you look around the entire group of cars that are available from all of the companies, you'll find something that you want. I find something lacking among our own products.
Yeah.
But I'm just one consumer among millions.
You're still a loyal GM fan.
Oh, yes,
right?
Sure.
You drive a Buick.
Drive a Buick and a Corvette and Opel GT. I have to drive the Opel GT because I helped create it. But
did you bring one over from Germany, or this is one of the...
No, this is one I bought locally.
Oh. What has happened to GM of Europe? Has it be... what's its current status in terms of local autonomy? Or is it still pretty much tied to the parent corporation, or is it pretty much going its own way?
Well, it's still tied to General Motors.
Right.
But they have...
Financially, but philosophically.
I don't think philosophically it's ever been tied too much.
You certainly had, if not begun that tradition, perpetuated it. Felt you had to have local autonomy to decide the market. And
yes. Yeah, I think it's very difficult to change millions of people's minds about what they like in a product. And although there is such a thing now as an international look, and I think we're all flowing into that a little bit more. It used to be that a German car was quite different than an American car. I think everybody is changing a little bit. I think the Germans have changed in their taste, and the Americans certainly have changed in their taste, and probably the Japanese are doing a pretty good job of getting that mix
right,
to appeal to all of the people. There's certainly a big difference in the taste between the English and the Germans on interiors. The Germans generally like something quite plain in the interior and stiff seats, and the English like them softer and more wooden sides and so on.
Yeah. What do you see for the future of design? Do you see it becoming longer and lower and more wedge and more round? And,
well, certainly not longer or lower. I don't think you can make them.
Might be longer, but lower and rounder.
Well, probably not much lower.
Okay.
Because you still have to put the same people inside.
Right.
And they still have to ride in comfort, and that demands certain chair heights.
Yeah.
Certainly rounder, yes, it's more aerodynamic. But
more flush surfaces.
Not, as Iacocca has said, not necessarily a flying potato.
Right.
There's got to be another answer.
Well, where do you think it will go?
It can be aerodynamic. It doesn't need to be fat round.
Uh-huh. Which a couple of manufacturers have made a decided move in that direction.
Yeah. But you know, it's just a changing progress.
Yeah.
When you first start to make it aerodynamic, maybe it's not going to look as light or as thin as some of the other cars.
But the wedge shape...
Wedge shape, I think, is part of the aerodynamics. It's,
right, yeah.
It's going to happen. A lot of people don't like it at first, but I think they'll get used to it.
Yeah. Of course, the Europeans have pioneered in that shape.
Yeah.
Are finally coming up with it. Mm-hmm. We're limping along a bit.
We're following behind.
Behind a bit, yeah.
But I see no reason why a car can't be aerodynamic and beautiful at the same time.
Because the real revolution has come in the interior, which is like, in terms of ergonomics and gadgetry, people-pleasing devices.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
How do you feel about that direction?
Well, I personally am not too fond of some of the things that are being done, but I think some of the things are being done just to be different. I think some of the instrumentation that's being done is done more just to look new, to look different. But it's not quite as pleasing as some of the round dials.
Right. It's more distracting.
So it may be a passing fancy, I don't know.
But the comfort quotient is a plus, I think.
Yeah.
The new seats and the new fabrics. The fact that you have everything within the reach of your fingers without having to stretch, which you say was a plus.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, in the last 20 years, has there been a revolution in fabrics and colors and seating?
Well, I think the biggest, there have been all the things that you're talking about,
yeah.
Sure. That's the way science is, it just keeps improving. Unfortunately, I think the American cars in the past, they have not considered the driver-passenger comfort, especially on long trips, the way they have in Europe. In Europe, for many years, you had reclining seats, you have lumbar supports, and all those things, and a little better support on the sides. And so many of those things have not been considered on the American cars. It's very unfortunate. We had them in Germany, but I think it was considered too important to be able to build a seat easily. And never mind all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why we used to have bench seats that go all the way across. And but now when you get in the car with that kind of a seat, you're rolling all around.
You're waiting for the constraint. Bucket seat came over in racing.
Yes. But even in the lowest cost cars now, you get quite good seats.
Yeah.
And our American cars are improving that way, although when you get a six-way seat and you get a reclining seat and so on, it's an extra cost option on extra cost option on extra cost option. Whereas some of the Japanese have it in the package to start with. I've been for a long time in having a car that people like, even though it's an extra cost to put these things in, but not do it as an option, but do it with the base car.
Standard equipment, yeah.
That turns out to be a lot less expensive for the buyer than adding an option with its extra profit.
Of course it is. It's more profitable for the maker and the dealer. The Recaro seat has been probably standard in Europe for some time, but just getting into some of the other GM and other lines as a standard seat. It seemed to me that, and of course, safety considerations, of course, was one of your big problems probably in the late 60s and early 70s too. You had to build in.
Problems. I think they're just inconvenience.
Yeah. Which were overcome very handily eventually.
Yeah.
So where do you see the industry today in terms of design? Do you see them in an evolutionary process or a revolutionary process?
Well, I think you have to say it's an evolution. I don't think we need or want a revolution. But I think we've got to, in some cars more than others, have to evolve a little faster.
Uh-huh.
And also, one thing that I don't understand is why it takes so long to go from the design process to the building process.
So it's
years. And it's harder, the more years it is, the harder it is for the designer to picture what the people want.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to make a design that's good for, that starts in 1990 or 91 and go on for 5 years, that's a lot harder job than if I have to design one that starts in 1988.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it seems to me that the time lag between the design approval and the building of a car is longer today than it was when I was in the business.
Why is that, and how what would you recommend, how do you see it could be improved?
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that it's necessary.
It certainly wasn't in your day, was it?
Well, in my time, we were trying to shorten that from where we were then.
Right, yeah. But it seems
and we had, you know, new ideas to shorten that time with computers and all the things that we have.
Yeah.
It seems like that would reduce.
For some reason, it's being lengthened.
Then along with that is the design approval time.
Mm-hmm.
I think could be shortened.
Speeded up. Right. Too many people have to sign off on it. Is that it?
I'm afraid that might be it.
Yeah. All the way up to the top, I suppose.
Too many people have to agree that that's the right way to go.
I think most of the companies are working on that at the moment. I think DAP has become a naughty word, and I think they're trying to turn it into something more flexible, more usable.
Yeah. Well, maybe there are too many committees.
always the bane of the stylist or the designer, I suspect. Endless committees. Well, you spent a happy 40 years, obviously.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. What have you done since your retirement? Have you done any consulting work of any kind? Or have you been approached to do any?
No, I stayed away from that.
Pretty much.
I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. What I'm doing is, well, I get up in the morning, and I read the paper, and do all the things that I need to do, and then I decide what I'm going to do for the rest of the day.
Good. You obviously keep up on your old comrades in arms.
To a certain extent, although I have no regular connection with any of them.
Most of them are doing pretty well. Mr. Jordan has, as of today, been nominated to take the vice presidency of design. And David Hulls obviously will move up with him, I suspect. The younger men are coming along, finally. They're beginning to finally move up the ladder, and perhaps we'll see a new direction.
Well, I think you will.
General Motors style.
I think you will.
Yeah.
And I would hope that outside of design staff, that there'll be an awareness of the need for this.
Right.
Because Chuck is going to need it to push the right designs along.
Right. So there needs to be a new awareness and a new flexibility in the whole.
Yeah.
Corporate staff.
I would think there'd be a lot of pressure within the corporation to do this, just this thing, because I'm sure the dealers are raising hell.
What do you think of the Saturn project? Have you? Any,
I don't
any
know enough about it. Yeah.
So far, it just seems to be something of a public relations device. Although apparently,
well, I would hope it was a lot more than that, but I don't know.
At least all this has been revealed. Apparently, they do have a car, a concept car, and they. Beginning to an approach to a manufacturing facility, but there seems to be, it may well be set back a bit by this current fiscal constraint.
I've been away for 8 years.
8 years.
So you sort of lose contact.
Well, this has been most fascinating. Thank you, Mr. Claire McKeegan, for this career recital.
Thank you very much.